Blog Talk Radio.
Oh yeah. Oh. It's NAAEA time. It's Community Conversations, Part 13, What Slavery Did to Us, with Brother George. We're going to talk about waking up a new mind. In this 13-part series, we're going to talk about what slavery did to us. This is the Brother George discuss the impact of Willie Lynch. Oh yeah, oh yeah. There's no other love, or no better love than love for self and kind. We're loving each other 365 days of the year by having African American empowerment. And this empowerment series is about us. It's about the mission of the National African American Empowerment Association, and that is to ensure that the needs of the African American community are met through the development of programs and services that educate, inspire, motivate, empower African Americans and the African American community to do what we need to do, to step up to the plate and start hitting some homers, start hitting some threes on them. Start making it to first base. And even if that means we got to bunt in or we got to run 1 yard for a first down, we scoring. I don't care how you, what game you playing. The game that we playing is the game of life, and we playing to win. So we thank you again for joining us for the Empowerment Series of Community Conversations. And I welcome in my brother, George. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am, brother. I'm here, and I'm ready and willing.
All right, well, let's start with the Willie Lynch segment, and give us what you got.
Well, today I'm going to be quoting from a book by Dr. Amos Wilson, and the name of that book is The Falsification of African Consciousness, Eurocentric History, Psychiatry, and the Politics of White Supremacy. Now, what he's doing here is he's quoting something from Chancellor Williams, and I think it's an excellent quote. And this is on the power of self-transformation. Now, when you're talking about Willie Lynch and you're talking about destroying the Willie Lynch chip, we don't always just talk about, the miserable things that happen to us. We also talk about ways to destroy that Willie Lynch chip that's in you. As noted by Chancellor Williams, the destruction of black civilization, the way we think, the way we behave, helps to create the kinds of victimization from which we suffer. The oppressive configuration the white man has assumed in relationship to the black man is in good part the result of the fact that we have permitted ourselves to remain in a complementary, subordinate configuration conducive to his oppressive designs. The white man cannot be what he is unless we are what we are as a people. And one way of transforming the white man is through self-transformation. He cannot be what he is if we are not what we are. Therefore, we must take responsibility for that part of our personality, that part of our community, that part of ourselves over which we have control, and change that part. And if we change those parts of ourselves, in our community, we shall change this man. In other words, as long as we continue to look to white folks to give us something, you know, we begging, they're going to educate us right, they're going to do all these things for us, nothing is going to change because he's empowered by that. But when you decide to say, hey, we could do this our own selves. We can take care of our own problems. You know, if you just leave us alone, you know, then we can take care of what's going on with us. And all we have to do is focus in like adults do, you know, to solve problems. And so from that point, you know, we'll be great. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about Famous Amos a little bit further on into the program. But that's my Willie Lynch segment.
Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. That's a taste of Dr. Amos Wilson. Brother George opened it up with a powerful piece. We got to be able to break this Willie Lynch. We got to destroy this Willie Lynch. And we're talking about the falsification of the African-American, African consciousness. We have to control ourselves by controlling our minds. Let's get into it, brother. Tell us about Dr. J, Dr. Leonard Jeffries.
Now, I'm going to, you know, we're getting into a lot of the scholarship of our people, and these people are in large part the reasonings for the success that we have as a people, that we've grown. Because if you've listened to this program from beginning until now, you realize that our people have really went through a transformation doing these things. Now, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, a political scientist, historian, educator, and Pan-Africanist, is a founding director and a former vice president and president of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. Jeffries, known for his Afro-centered scholarship, achieved national prominence in the early 1990s for his historical statements about Jews and European people. In a 1991 speech, he stated that Jews financed the slave trade, used the movie industry to hurt black people, and that whites are ice people, while Africans are sun people. Jeffries was discharged from his position as chairman of the Black Studies Department at the City University of New York, leading to a lengthy legal battle before he was reinstated. Jeffries remains a leading voice and theoretician in African-centered education. Dr. Leonard Jeffries is a founding director of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations and is former president of the African Heritage Association. His scholastic exploits have taken him to Ghana, Brazil, Switzerland, and throughout the Caribbean. Now, I call him Dr. J because, you know, he's another lecturer that we brought to the city of Richmond. And man, Dr. Jeffries was just amazing with information. You know, he's not only just, you know, a teacher, but he's also a scholar. He's an archaeologist. He goes out, or anthropologist. He goes out and physically goes amongst the people and studies the people to have accurate information about what he's talking about. And the kind of statements that he made at the time, of course, is going to be rejected because they have put out a lot of misinformation about different peoples and who is this and who is that. And when Leonard Jeffries did his research and came up with some accurate information, they rejected it and they wanted to expel him from the university, like they did with many of these scholars that I'm speaking about right now. But Dr. Leonard Jeffries, he's one of them seniors. And so it's back to you, Marvin.
If you don't know, now you know. It's Dr. J, Dr. Leonard Jeffries. Go out and look at some of his materials, get his books, and Dr. Amos Wilson as well. Again, we're giving you the scholars. You got to do the work of looking at the information that we're sharing, do your own research, and then share this information with your children, with your relatives, and with your families and friends. It's the NAAEA Community Conversations with Brother George. It's part 13 of What Slavery Did to Us. Let's move on to the entrepreneurial spirit of the people by Dr. Claude Anderson.
Now, Dr. Claude Anderson, man, I'd like to give y'all some background information on these people, and then I'll say a little bit about my experience with them. Dr. Claude Anderson is president of Powernomics Corporation of America Incorporated and the Harvest Institute, where he sells his books, and he's an author and an activist. Anderson was state coordinator of education for Florida under Governor Reuben Askew during the tumultuous period of the 1970s. After successful social reform projects in Florida and leading President Jimmy Carter's Florida campaign to win in the state, Carter appointed Anderson as the federal co-chair for a commission of governors in the Southeast states. In that position, his rank was assistant secretary in the United States Department of Commerce. He chaired a regional commission that funded and directed economic development projects for governors in those states. I'm going to tell you why that's significant. As an entrepreneur, Dr. Anderson built Waterland Fisheries Incorporated, a seafood factory he operates on Maryland's eastern shore. As an example of Powernomics principles, Waterland Fisheries has capacity to produce 1 million pounds of live, high-quality fish annually in a controlled indoor environment. It is the largest aquacultural facility in Maryland and one of the largest in the nation. Now, Dr. Claude Anderson also, he wrote some books. And the books that he wrote, I mean, they're very significant. Black Labor, White Wealth, A Search for Power and Economic Justice, and Powernomics, The National Plan to Empower Black People. Now, Powernomics is a concept. The concept of Powernomics was created by Claude Anderson and is described in his book, Powernomics, The National Plan to Empower Black America. The Powernomics concept and plan teaches blacks how to pool resources and aspect of power so that they can produce, distribute, and consume in a way that creates goods and wealth. Dr. Rosie Mulligan wrote in Pasita Journal that Nipsey Hussle followed Dr. Claude Anderson. In other words, a lot of people are big Nipsey Hussle fans. And it says here that Dr. Anderson's book, Powernomics, The National Plan to Empower Black People, is the blueprint to save Black America. Also used by other ethnicities, it lays out the plan plainly to enable Black America to dig from beneath the economic rubbish. Nipsey Hussle followed that plan. And a lot of people know that Nipsey Hussle was very influential in creating a economy in the Black community. And he was very beloved, you know, before his life was taken sometime, I think was last year or so. But, you know, his life was taken. But Nipsey Hussle, he was well known. He used those same principles that Claude Anderson was talking about. But at one time in the 90s, Claude Anderson was going from one mega church to another, you know, the Black mega churches, and talking to our people about Powernomics. And he was a great influencer of starting different processes with our people to put their money into. It's very similar to what I was talking about when I spoke on the desperate need for our people to understand political language. And I used the mega church with a grocery store type situation, you know, as an example, and I really got that from Claude Anderson, you know. But Claude Anderson, you know, he's a great entrepreneur, and hopefully, you know, our people will begin to pick up on that, you know, in another new decade and take advantage of it, you know. And so I'm going back to you, Marvin.
All right, it's Powernomics. It's Dr. Claude Anderson. Check out his work, powerful stuff. And it goes along with our economic program with the NAAEA. We're talking about politics, economics, athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, nutrition, culture, and education. It's a well-rounded program and a concept of understanding the political arena, capitalism and economics, how to manage your money, how to take care of your body and your mind, how to have cultural and relevant cultural programs, and then a comprehensive education that allows us to compete fully as human beings on this earth. All right, Brother George, let's go and look at the versatile knowledge of Dr. Bruce Bridges, one of my favorites.
Well, once again, Bruce is a personal friend of mine. And, you know, his vast, you know, wealth of information and knowledge, I think it came from, you know, the fact that he owned the No Bookstore. And so by having a bookstore, I'm quite sure that he was reading, you know, a lot of the books that he owned. But, I mean, even before then, being a professor at North Carolina Central and also teaching at North Carolina State University, he was just, you know, an amazing guy. Now, I'm going to say a little bit about him, too. Dr. Bridges is the author of The Ghetto Mind and The Roots of Geography. His most recent work is Recapturing the African Mind. He is recognized as an expert in the fields of history, geopolitics, and multicultural systems, no question. Currently, he is a consultant for Nigeria West. He is a consultant for Marlon and Tito Jackson, I'm sorry, of the Jackson Five for the Motherland Project in Nigeria. He lectured at the Azikiwe University in Nigeria, West Africa. He appeared recently on the Yah Is Real television program in Chicago. Dr. Bridges was also involved with the cultural diversity across the curriculum for the department chairs. He is currently teaching at the Apex School of Theology in Durham, North Carolina. I have to upgrade myself and learn how to pronounce a lot of the words in the mother tongue because they get me tongue twisted. But Dr. Bridges, he once, from a personal standpoint, he did a tape lecture called What They Never Told You in History Class. Man, Dr. Bridges was talking about a deck of cards and the fact that you had 52 cards in the deck, and that meant, you know, the 52 weeks in the year, and that you had four suits, which was the four seasons. And that you had 13 cards in you had 13 cards in each color in each suit, and the 13 cards were the same as the 13 astrological signs. And it was more in that, you know, that deck of cards. He was just a phenomenal guy. He just knew so much in-depth information, you know, about different things, not just that, but just speaking on things like where the alphabet came from and where word pronunciations came from. I mean, this brother was phenomenal, you know, and I'll always love him and I always appreciate him because he introduced me to a lot of Afrocentric Information and Afrocentric Thought. And that's my brother, Dr. Bruce Bridges.
All right, do your homework, Dr. Bruce Bridges, one of our versatile leaders and kings of knowledge. As we continue to move on, let's slide on up to Washington, D.C., and take a trip down the Potomac and Egypt on the Potomac with Dr. Anthony Browder.
Before I get to Dr. Browder, I wanted to say that sometimes, you know, you have people that are just, and Dr. Bridges told me this. He said, a lot of times I don't want to be introduced by my scholarly accomplishments. He says, sometimes I just like being introduced that I'm another brother in the hood, you know, and that I got some knowledge that I want to share with the people. And we have to learn how to appreciate our brothers that's in the hood that's got a lot of knowledge. And I'm about to talk about another one that's Anthony Browder. Now, one of the things that I noticed is that some of these brothers don't have the title doctor, but I mean, they've done more work than the average doctor that's out here, you know, and one of them I'm about to talk about is Anthony Browder. Now, Anthony Browder is an author, publisher, cultural historian, artist, and an educational consultant. He is a graduate of Howard University and has lectured extensively throughout the United States and on five continents. Mr. Browder is the founder and director of the IKG Cultural Resources and has devoted 35 years researching ancient Egyptian history, science, philosophy, and culture. He has traveled to Egypt 52 times since 1980 and is currently the director of the ASA Restoration Project, which is funding the excavation and restoration of two 25th Dynasty tombs of Kushite noblemen on the West Bank of Luxor, Egypt. Now, Kushite is another word for Ethiopia. So because Egypt was a part of the Ethiopic Empire, then that's why he's, you know, doing something with those tombs of Kushite noblemen. Browder is the first African American to fund and coordinate an archaeological dig in Egypt and has led 20 archaeological missions to Egypt since 2009. Mr. Browder's three decades of study had led him to the conclusion that ancient Africans were the architects of civilization and developed the rudiments of what has become the scientific, religious, and philosophical backbone of mankind. It is from this framework that the IKG has concentrated its research and disseminated its findings. He is the author of six publications, including the bestsellers From the Browder File, which you got to get that. That's like an easy read, and it's a bunch of articles that he wrote at one time about black people in Africa. He wrote about a lot of different things. It wasn't just the Nile Valley. That's his specialty now. Nile Valley Contributions to Civilization and Egypt on the Potomac. And the co-author of four publications, including two written with his own daughter, Atlas Ty Browder. And that's Brother Anthony Browder.
When you get a chance, do your research on Egypt on the Potomac. It's a great tour. I've been on it myself. Wonderful, wonderful history. Right in Washington, D.C., not that far from here if you're in Richmond or if you're on the East Coast, check them out. Great work. And then go look at his book, The Browder Files. It is powerful. It's impactful. We got greats right here. It's right here for us. All we have to do now is take the step forward to reach out to them. Join us each Saturday at 2 p.m. for Empowerment Saturday. Oh, yeah. It's our show where we talk about things that are pertinent to us. Our magic is us talking to us about us and how we can improve ourselves. Join us each Saturday, 2 p.m. for Empowerment Saturday. It's 2 p.m. Eastern. All right. We're building the Empowerment Network each Saturday, one day at a time. We're coming in from Philadelphia. We're in Canada. We've been over in Great Britain, Bangladesh, Colombia, South America, Nashville, Tennessee, St. Louis, Missouri, Houston, Texas, and the list goes on and on and on. The Empowerment Network is 365 days of us doing us. All right, Brother George, let's get to the Malcolm X of Black Psychology with Dr. Amos Wilson.
You know, I called Dr. Amos that because, Dr. Amos Wilson that because, you know, each time that I heard him speak, he was just so fiery and so deliberate and so unchallenging. You know, I mean, he was, well, not unchallenging, but so challenging, you know, and so fearless in his arguments that he reminded me of like a Malcolm, you know, of like a Malcolm of his time. Now, I'm gonna say a little bit about Amos Wilson. Professor Amos Wilson was a former social caseworker, supervising probation officer, psychological counselor, training administrator in the New York City Department of Juvenile Justice, and assistant professor of psychology at the City University of New York. If you notice, a lot of these scholars teach at the same university. He was born in Hattiesburg, Mississippi in 1941. Amos completed his undergraduate degree at the acclaimed Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia. He later migrated to New York, where he attained his PhD from Fordham University. Familiarity referred to as Brother Amos. He availed himself for numerous appearances at educational, cultural, political organizations such as the First World Alliance, the African Poetry Theater, African Echoes, House of Our Lord Church, the Patrice Lumumba Coalition, the Slave Theater, and the CEPOTAP, to name just a few. A lot of those are very well-noted speaking, you know, engagement places where a lot of high-quality scholars go to speak. And I know the Slave Theater, I know that right off the bat, and African Echoes also. His travels took him throughout the United States to Canada and the Caribbean. He spoke on the powerless, powerful, black falsified consciousness. This came out of the book that I just read that quote out of by Dr. Amos Wilson. We're unconscious of the power that is in our hands. We're like the Israelite who threw their gold rings and gold of various types into the melting vat to make a golden god, and then kneel down to worship it and perceive it as having power over them. African people with the natural resources of the world at their feet, with minds and bodies second to none, have given their power and wealth over to another people and have made that people powerful, and now are on our knees in front of those people begging for salvation, begging for jobs, begging for food, and begging for their very lives. The wealth and power of a people is not in the land, but in our minds. You know, I love to just quote Dr. Amos Wilson because I mean, he just says such impressionable things. If you get a chance to read him, if you get a chance to experience him on DVD, on YouTube, what have you, you know, please do that. And that's Dr. Amos Wilson.
You are listening to Community Conversations, part 13 of What Slavery Did to Us with Brother George. He's laying it down. It's part 13. We're in it deep, so go back and visit some of the shows and just listen right there. It's a wealth of knowledge and information that we have for you. All you have to do is listen. The scholars, the piece that we're talking about how our historians, how our people have put together a story, a narrative that tells us what has happened and what we need to do. It's all there. All you have to do is do the work. Now, let's go down to the great thinker. No, we've been there. The man who coined the phrase African American. Okay, I'm right. The great thinker, Professor James Small. Sorry, I got ahead of myself. People sometimes just like that. Brother George, give it to us.
Well, I call Professor Smalls the great thinker because he's another brother that, I mean, he's went through a wealth of experiences, life experiences. He has a lot of knowledge from, you know, experiences, so many things. And I'm just going to read through, you know, a lot of the things that he experienced because I think, he deserves that to be, you know, given credit for the things that he's accomplished. Professor James Smalls was born in 1945. Professor Smalls was born to a family that traces their descent from enslaved Africans to the Yoruba, Akan people of West Africa. Professor Smalls' heritage also stems from the Native American ancestors that inhabited these South Carolinian shores. Both his maternal grandmother and his paternal grandmother were members of the Chickasaw Nation and made their home along the mighty Wakwawa River. Now, he's actually talking about black folks because some of what they say are Native Americans are actually black people that were on this continent. And that's what he's actually talking about. Professor Smalls graduated from the all-black Howard High School in Georgetown, South Carolina in 1964. He then served in the United States Navy for 2 years during the Vietnam War era. Upon his release from the military services, Professor Smalls moved to New York City, where he joined the Organization of African American Unity, founded by the legendary Malcolm X. In 1967, Professor Smalls became Imam Minister of the Muslim Mosque Incorporated, also founded by Malcolm X. In 1975, Professor Smalls traveled to the holy city of Mecca in Saudi Arabia to make his holy pilgrimage, the Hajj. For 11 years, Professor Small served as principal bodyguard to the late Ellen Collin, the sister of Malcolm X. The then president of the Organization of African American Unity between the years of 1966 and 1980, Professor Smalls held membership in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. So now we're right back to that, you know, another brother that was in the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the NAACP, and he was in the Yoru Fighters. And during this period, Professor Smalls had the opportunity to interact with such historical giants as Congressional Congressman Adam Clayton Powell Jr., Kwame Ture, who was
H-Rack Brown, Eldridge Cleaver, and Lumumba Shakur, and the Black Panther Party, in which he served as a liaison between the Black Panther Party and the Organization of African American Unity. Professor Smalls has been a member of the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilization for 14 years. He served as president of the Association for Classical African Civilizations Eastern Region for 2 years, where he worked and studied with Dr. John Henry Clark, Dr. Yusef Ben Yohanan, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Dr. Ivan Van Sertima, Dr. Asa Hilliard, you haven't heard about him yet, but we're getting there, Dr. Wade Nobles, Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. Francis Crest Wilson, just to name a few. Now, those were some heavy people that I just now mentioned, you know, that he has broke scholarship bread with. Professor Smalls taught nearly 20 years at the City University of New York, including 17 years at the City College of New York's Black Studies Department. Now, I'm going to take a quote, you know, that from Professor Smalls. Forgetting history can be very dangerous for us as a people. Forgetting history can be very dangerous for us as a people. One is fully conscious when he or she is the result of having been informed and instructed by the experience of his or her ancestors, and use that knowledge to master, understand, and become able to create institutions that allow him or her to live in harmony with the rest of nature and the universe. Culture will tell us how to use our politics to manage our economics. Culture will tell us how to use our politics to manage our economics. And that's Brother James Small.
Lots and lots and lots of information, Brother James Small. Well read, brother. Well read. You're listening to NAAEA Community Conversations, Part 13, with Brother George, as he continues to lay it down what slavery did to us. And so what we want to do now is ask you to become a member. Join us at the NAAEA. Become a member of the organization. Become motivated, inspired, and empowered to take that step to make a change in your community. Answer the call by becoming politically, economically, culturally, educationally, and personally empowered. Join us as we embrace morals, values, integrity, personal responsibility, character, and accountability. Join the Empowerment Association today. Now let's move on to the man who coined the phrase African American. It's our brother Jesse Jackson.
I wanted to speak about Jesse Jackson because, you know, I don't know if a lot of people do know that back in the 1980s, you know, the late 1980s, that's why he's in with the 90s, he did coin the phrase African American, that he was the one that pushed us to no longer be classified as Black, but be classified as African Americans, because there was a debate about, you know, people that's not connected to a landmass, you know, and there's no place called Black land, that, you know, we have to start being connected to a landmass. And so we come from, the majority of us come from Africa. And so that phrase was picked up by the scientific community and everybody pretty much agreed with it, you know, but he's the one that actually pushed it into existence. Now, Jesse Jackson, his original name was Jesse Lewis Burns, and he was born on October 8, 1941 in Greenville, South Carolina. American civil rights leader, Baptist minister, and politician whose bids for the United States presidency in the Democratic Party nomination races in 1983-84 and in 1987-88 were the most successful by an African-American until 2008, when Barack Obama captured the Democratic presidential nomination. Jackson's life and career have been marked by both accomplishment and controversy. Jackson adopted the name of his stepfather, Charles Jackson, at about the age of 15. A good student in high school, Jackson was elected class president and later attended the University of Illinois on a football scholarship. He was a damn good athlete, you know. He then transferred to the predominantly black Agricultural and Technical College of North Carolina, which is North Carolina A&T now. And he received his Bachelor of Arts degree in sociology. He moved to Chicago in 1966, did graduate work at the Chicago Theological Seminary, and was ordained as a Baptist minister in 1968. While an undergraduate, Jackson became involved with the civil rights movement. In 1965, he went to Selma, Alabama, to march with Dr. Martin Luther King and became a worker in King's Southern Christian Leadership Conference. That's the group that's called the SCLC. Jackson helped found the Chicago branch of Operation Breadbasket, the economic arm of the SCLC, in 1966, and served as the organization's national director from 1967 to 1971. He was in Memphis, Tennessee with King when the civil rights leader was assassinated April of 1968. Though his exact location at the moment King was shot has long been a matter of controversy, accused of using the SCLC for personal gain, Jackson was suspended by the organization, whereupon he formally resigned in 1971 and formed Operation PUSH, People Unite to Save Humanity, a Chicago-based organization in which he advocated black self-help and achieved a broad audience for his liberal views. In 1968, he established the National Rainbow Coalition, which sought equal rights for African Americans, women, and homosexuals. These two organizations merged in 1996, to form the Rainbow PUSH Coalition. Now, you know, I was around with Jesse Jackson's time, and he put a lot of work into the community. You know, maybe he did do, you know, a few what they call controversial things. He said that he was closer to Dr. King, and Dr. King died in his arms, and they said that he didn't, you know. But, like, that doesn't take away from the, you know, the sacrifices that a person makes for their people, you know. And Jesse did. He sacrificed a lot for our people. I mean, I don't have to agree with Jesse, you know, tit for tat to appreciate, you know, the work that he put in as a black man for our people, you know. And so I wanted to make sure that he was a part of this discussion. I may have left some people out that you may think should have been in, but, you know, I can't get everybody. You know, and so, but I'm trying to, you know, give credit to as many that I possibly can. But that's our brother, Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson.
Well, you're doing a great job. You're educating our people, and that's what we need. You're providing the information. And if anybody has a complaint, you call me. My number is in the book. Let's keep moving forward to the only black man, the only black leader
in that time period, which is around 1995, who could call for a million black men to come to Washington, D.C. and stand up for our people, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan.
I could never have had a conversation without speaking about the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He's my leader, you know, and teacher. And, you know, I just, you know, I've learned and experienced so much under the minister that I'm just forever indebted to him. Because even though I came in the nation at the end of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's time, I really didn't learn as much during that time period because there was a lot going on. There was a lot of confusion. The nation was in, you know, it was in a struggle, you know, power struggle between Imam Muhammad at that time, Minister Wallace Dean Muhammad, and he eventually changed his name to Warf Dean Muhammad, and he transformed the nation into the world community of Islam in the West, which it's a lot of brothers that are in Islam, and they followed the teachings of Imam Warf Dean Muhammad, and that's perfectly fine, you know, but the nationalist teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad was for me. And so when the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan took on the task of bringing that back after he was informed by Brother Jibril Muhammad, and at the time his name was Bernard Kushmir, and he came to the minister and told the minister, you're the one that's going to have to re-raise the nation. Because it was other people that were trying, and he was given that task, and actually he didn't even know if he could do it because he told us about those stories. And I'm kind of getting personal with the minister because, like I said, the minister contributed a great deal to my life. But let's get to the minister. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, the national representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. Many people, please don't get it confused that the minister thinks that he's the head of the Nation of Islam. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad will always be the head of the Nation of Islam. He's just his national representative in his absence. And that's the way that we've always seen it. So I just want to clarify that picture. The Nation of Islam, under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is the catalyst for the growth and development of Islam in America. Founded in 1930 by Master Fard Muhammad and led to prominence from 1934 to 1975 by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Nation of Islam continues to positively impact the quality of life in America. Thank you. The departure of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in 1975 and the assumption of leadership by Imam Warf Dean Muhammad brought drastic changes to the Nation of Islam. After approximately 3 years of wrestling with these changes and a reappraisal of the condition of black people, the value of the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Minister Louis Farrakhan decided to return to the teachings and program with a proven ability to uplift and reform blacks. And to me, you know, he did the right thing, you know, and I'm forever grateful that he made that move. But let's get into some of the things that were accomplished during his time period. I mean, he went across the length and breadth of this country, teaching at a time when there were no voices in America for black people. Jesse was saying certain things, but he wasn't getting to the nitty-gritty of what was actually happening to our people. And so the minister earned a great deal of respect. And you still hear his name mentioned with honor amongst many of the rappers, many of the hip-hop generation, because they remember the contributions that diminished the game to our people. And he was the only person that could have called a million black men to Washington, and they showed up at his call. And what that showed us was not that the minister was this powerful, you know, dictatorship type of the black community type individual. It showed us that we were beginning to come into the same mind. That's what it actually showed us. We didn't look at it in the nation as though, you know, what we accomplished was, yeah, the minister got everybody to come to. That wasn't the important thing. The important thing was that we showed up and that we were in the same mind, and that it was beginning to get close to the time when we would be making certain advancements and beginning to work together again with each other so that we could achieve what we once had. And so I always, you know, want to let it be known, you know, that I'm a follower of the most honorable Elijah Muhammad under the direction of the honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And that's the minister.
Well, Brother George, we know there's so much, much more to the minister that you really didn't touch on today. So do your research. Think about all the work that the minister has done. And it is true. It is true. The Nation of Islam has helped our people to find themselves, to uplift themselves, and become a very upstanding part of our community. And I give praise and honor to the Nation of Islam for that, because they are helping lead the way in the resurrection of the mindset of our people, both physically and mentally and emotionally. So let's continue the work of gaining that collective consciousness. Now, let's go back, Brother George, to the statement that you made about Amos Wilson, and then I'll ask you a question as we close out.
Well, the statement that I made was, he said he was making a quote, "The powerless, powerful black falsified consciousness." In other words, there's something about us that we're not understanding. We're unconscious of the power that is in our hands. We're like the Israelites who threw their golden rings and gold of various types into the melting vat to make a golden god and kneeled down to worship it and perceived it to have power over them. You get that? They put all their gold and created a golden calf and then started worshiping it like it had some type of power. Now he's making a comparison with us. African people, with the natural resources of the world at their feet, with minds and bodies second to none, have given their power and wealth over to another people and have made that people powerful, and now are on our knees in front of those people begging for salvation, begging for jobs, begging for food, begging for our very lives. The wealth and power of a people is not in their lands. It's in our minds. Amos Wilson.
There it is. So we have had an opportunity to think about where we are. And again, the brother says it's in your mind. That's where it starts and that's where it ends. Free the mind and the body will follow. So, Brother George, I want to ask you a question before we wrap this segment up. Let's talk to the people about the purpose of these 13 segments that we've gone through so far. What is it that you're trying to convey to our people, and where do we go from here?
Well, what I'm trying to convey is, first, I'm trying to use a history lesson that might be of value to our young people, because some of our older people, they might not be that interested in knowing what our history is at this point. But our young people, they actually need to know history from our perspective. And I did the best job that I can do right now. I haven't completed it because there's probably a few more segments to go, but I did the best job that I could as far as starting and showing our people who we were before we went into slavery and some of the things that we had accomplished as a group, and then who we are, you know, and then our venture into slavery and the different things that were the different ideas about who the black man was, you know, being reinvented into being, you know, this ignorant, you know, subhuman type individual that they transformed us into. And then to take us through the struggles of regaining our humanity. And I'm very proud of my people and what we have accomplished, you know, in the world. And so, you know, I experienced something by just doing this whole history lesson, you know, just how much our people have given, not just to our own struggle, but to the world, because other people experience what you're experiencing through you. When they read what you went through, when they hear our cries into the wilderness, when we're talking, when we're lecturing, when we're, you know, with Black Lives Matter, with the Million Man March back then, with Dr. King's March on Washington. All of these things are reflections of the experience of the black man and woman here in America and the challenges that we went through to bring us out on the other side. And we're going to succeed, y'all. We're going to succeed. We're going to rise and become a powerful nation once again. And we're on the incline right now. We're on the incline right now. And all we got to do is simply work together. That's all we have to do. It's a very simple proposition. All we have to do is work together. And I'm going to restate what I said last week about Dr. Byron Shango. Blessed are those who struggle. Oppression is worse than the grave. It is better to live and die for a noble cause than to live and die as a slave. That's Dr. Ishaka Musa Byron Shango. And that's Brother George, and I'm out.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. You've been listening to Brother George, part 13 of NAA Community Conversations, What Slavery Has Done to Us, the Awakening of the New Mind. It's the African mind. It's the African-American mind, and it's your mind. As we continue to grow ourselves, think about who it is that you can become just by doing the work of working on yourself, educating yourself and your community and your people politically, economically. Understand the importance of health, wellness, nutrition, culture, and education. It's the NAAEA. It's Community Conversations with Brother George. We'll be back part 14 next week. But also, I want you to take the time to go back through the series. Go back from 1 to 13 and listen and find out, and then do the research and educate yourself. That's it for today. Thank you very much, Brother George. We'll see you on Empowerment Saturday. Also, we have a new Wisdom News magazine that's out. If you need a copy, just get in touch with me. You can get to me at the website, naaea.weebly.com. We got it all together. We're building this network 1 week at a time. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Peace.
change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.